This is day six of this November 2017 7-day session. We'll take up a koan today. This one is from the Mumon Khan, and it's called Kicking Over the Water Bottle, number 40. And for each koan in the Mumon Khan is the case, and then there are the commentary and the verse that were composed by Zen Master Mumon, who compiled this collection. So we'll just do the case. When Isan was with Hyakujo, he worked as the head cook at the monastery. Hyakujo wanted to choose an abbot for Dai Monastery, so he called together all the monks and told them that the one who could answer his question in an outstanding manner would be sent. Then he took a water bottle, stood it on the floor, and said, "Don't call this a water bottle, but tell me what it is." The head monk said, "It can't be called a wooden sandal." Hyakujo then asked Isan his opinion. Isan walked up, kicked over the water bottle, and left. Hyakujo laughed and said, "The head monk has lost." Isan was ordered to found the monastery. So these are two of the most famous of the great Tang Dynasty Chinese masters, Chan masters. And turning now to our beloved source of biographical material on the masters, and this is called Zen's Chinese Heritage, The Masters and Their Teachings by Andy Ferguson. First, this Hyakujo. Hyakujo is his Japanese name. His Chinese name is Baizhang Huihai. But I'm going to use the every time. I have to make a decision whether to go with a Japanese version or the Chinese version. And I think his name, his real Chinese name, is too similar to the other guy. So we're going to go with the Japanese version, Hyakujo. He was a foremost disciple of Ma Zhu. Ma Zhu is arguably the most prolific of the masters, and his having supposedly 139 enlightened disciples. This Hyakujo took his vows as a monk and under a Vinaya master. Vinaya is the school. It used to be, at that time, a big, popular school of Buddhism that emphasized a mastery of the precepts, in particular the monastic regulations. Many of the masters seem to have started there or sutra study, or both. And then they went on from those big schools to the Chan or Zen school. But Hyakujo worked under a Vinaya master. He was supposed to have been brilliant and learned as a young man. And then he went and found his way to train under this great Ma Zhu. And here's the story of Hyakujo's enlightenment. It actually is another koan in another koan collection about the wild ducks. One day, Hyakujo accompanied Ma Zhu on a walk. A flock of wild ducks flew past them. Boy, those geese have been at it this session, haven't they? You can imagine some huge powwow, some conference where they've been gathering their forces and staging the big move. I took a walk yesterday and saw that they were heading south in groups. A flock of wild ducks flew past them. Madzu said, "What's that?" Yakujo said, "Wild ducks." Madzu said, "Where'd they go?" Yakujo said, "They flew away." Madzu then twisted Hyakujo's nose so hard that he cried out. Madzu said, "So you say they've flown away." And upon hearing these words, Hyakujo attained enlightenment. And then the epilogue to that is he went back to the attendance room and Hyakujo was said crying loudly, and he must have really yanked him. One of the other attendants asked Hyakujo, "Are you homesick?" That's so poignant, you know, that would be the first place that this other monk would go, "Are you homesick?" Because, you know, to be a monk in those times meant to separate yourself permanently from your home. "Are you homesick?" Hyakujo said, "No." The attendant said, "Did someone curse at you?" Hyakujo said, "No." The attendant said, "Then why are you crying?" And Hyakujo said, "Madzu twisted my nose so hard that the pain was unbearable." The attendant said, "What did you do that offended him?" And Hyakujo said, "You go ask him." So the attendant trundled off to Madzu and said, "What did Hyakujo do to offend you? He's in his room crying. Please tell me." The great teacher said, "He himself knows. Go ask him." So the attendant returned to Hyakujo's hut and said to him, "The master says you already know, so I should come here and ask you." And at that, Hyakujo laughed out loud. Then this mystified the attendant. He said, "A moment ago you were crying, so why are you laughing now?" Hyakujo said, "My crying a moment ago is the same as my laughing now." The attendant was bewildered. The next day, Madzu went into the hall to address the monks. Just when the monks had finished assembling, Hyakujo rolled up his sitting mat. Madzu got down from his chair, and Hyakujo followed him to the abbot's room. Madzu said, "Just now, I hadn't said a word. Why did you roll up your sitting mat?" That would be a signal that the Teisho, the talk is over with. You roll up your sitting mat, and he hadn't even started yet. "Why did you roll up your sitting mat?" Hyakujo said, "Yesterday the master painfully twisted my nose." Madzu said, "Is there anything special about yesterday that you've noticed?" Hyakujo said, "Today my nose doesn't hurt anymore." And at that, Madzu said, "Then you really understand what happened yesterday." And at that, Hyakujo bowed and went out. "Is there anything special about yesterday that you've noticed?" He's testing him to see if he would talk about what a glorious experience he had. Instead, he says, "Today, my nose doesn't hurt anymore. Let's keep it in the present." Hyakujo is best known as having established the monastic rules of Zen monasteries. Until then, the monks had not done manual labor. They had hired lay people in the community to do all the repair and maintenance and other work for these huge monasteries. And he came out with this dictum, day of no work is a day of no eating. And ever since then, work, simple labor, has been a part of the Zen temples. I'm not going to read all of the exchanges here. There'll be another chance to some future koan to read about Hyakujo. We want to get to Isan. But here's just a couple more. Hyakujo said, I want someone to go and tell something to Zen Master Shi Tang. A disciple said, I'll go. Hyakujo said, how will you speak to him? The disciple said, I'll wait until I see him, then I'll speak. Hyakujo said, what will you say? The disciple said, when I come back, I'll tell you. Here's a very significant anecdote, because it's where the koan, what is it, what is this, seems to have originated as a koan. Hyakujo entered the hall to give a talk. When the monks had assembled, he suddenly leaped off of the Dharma seat and drove them from the hall with his staff. Just as they were running out of the hall, he called to them. When they turned around, he said, what is it? What is it? Of course, as a question, we can't even calculate when that originated in human history. What is it? Now, the other protagonist of the koan, Isan, the one who kicked over the water bottle, his Chinese name is Guishan, but we'll stick with the Japanese name, Isan. Of course, he was a disciple of Hyakujo, and he founded what came to be called the Guiyang school, one of the five traditional lineages of Zen. Some interest here, many koans in the Zen tradition consist of dialogues between Isan and Yangshan. Some of these koans and the teachings of this school in general are characterized by the use of symbols, symbolic actions, and metaphors. Although Zen's use of such devices was well established prior to this school, there they found their foremost expressions to date within the Chinese Zen tradition. So here's straight verbatim from the old records from ancient China, biographical material about Isan. He came from the village of such and such. At the age of 15, he studied under a Vinaya master. There it is again. And then later he received full ordination, where he studied the Mahayana and Hinayana sutras. There's the sutra study. So we got the Vinaya training and then the sutra study. And then at the age of 23, he graduated to He graduated to Hyakujo's place. Hyakujo permitted Isan to become his disciple upon their first meeting. And then later, Isan attained the position of head of practice among the monks. This is a vivid story. I still remember it from the early 70s when Roshi Kapo read it. Once, while
Isan
was acting as attendant to Hyakujo, Hyakujo asked him, "Who's there?" Isan said, "Me." Hyakujo then said to him, "Stick a poker in the fire and see if there's any fire left in it." So Isan did so and said, "There's no fire left." And then Hyakujo took the poker himself and, sticking it deep into the stove, he pulled out some hot embers. He showed this to Isan and said, "You said there was no fire left, but what about this?" And at hearing these words, Isan experienced great enlightenment. Another version of that is when Hyakujo pulled out an ember, he said, "Is this not fire?" It reminds me of what Roshi Kaplow wrote in his Kensho account in the Three Pillars of Zen. After his Kensho was certified, he reflected on a, or maybe it was someone else in the monastery who said to him, "In the driest hole, there's water." That got me through a few sesshins in my early years. Here's another story where when he was a master, Isan entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "The mind of a person of the way is forthright and undevious, with no front or back. It is neither deceitful nor deluded, and at all times it is watchful and straightforward, never covering the eyes nor plugging the ears. Such a mind is realized when emotions do not chase after things. All the ancient sages have simply said that by the practice of not giving rise to evil views or thoughts, the difficulties of a corrupted world become like the clear autumn waters, pure and unmoving, tranquil yet unimpeded. A person with such a mind may be called of the way, a person without worldly affairs." There's that word straightforward again. We were reading from the Sixth Patriarch a few days ago in Sesshin, and he was using the same word. Straightforward, undivided, no hidden agenda. No front or back. Roshi Kaplow always used to say that in Japan everything has a front and a back. There's the presentation, the official version of things, and then there's the reality that you don't see or hear about. It's one of the difficult things about navigating through Japan for a foreigner. Here's one of those exchanges between Isan and Yangshan that we just mentioned earlier. Isan asked Yangshan, "Of the 40 sections of the Nirvana Sutra, how many were spoken by the Buddha and how many were spoken by the devil?" Yangshan said, "All of them were spoken by the devil." And at that, Isan said, "Hereafter, no one will be able to cope with you. Very, very Zen-like response. Anything of words can be bedeviling. And then the finale here, it says, Isan expounded the Dharma for more than 40 years. This too is verbatim from the old records that were found on in monuments. In the year 853, he finished bathing, sat in a cross-legged position, and peacefully passed away. His age was 83, and he had been a monk for 64 years. He received the posthumous name Zen Master Great Perfection. By the way, I meant to mention the years of these guys. They're both in the 9th century, 8th to 9th century. Back to the case. At this time, where our case begins, Isan was not yet a master. He was working at Hyakujo's temple as the head cook, the Tenzo. And Hyakujo wanted to choose an abbot for Dai Monastery. I read from another source. This is a monastery that hadn't been founded yet, hadn't been built. But the decision was made to start a new monastery, and he wanted to find the right person. And so he set up this test, called together all the monks, and told them that the one who could answer his question in an outstanding manner would be sent. Now, the prelude to this, a Buddhist pilgrim, I'm back to Zen's Chinese heritage, a Buddhist pilgrim named Sima, S-I-M-A, which another source said he was a geomancer, skilled in foretelling things. This Sima spoke to Hyakujo and said, "Recently, I came upon a mountain named Big Gui, where 1,500 Buddhist worthies reside." Hyakujo said, "Should I go there to be the abbot?" The Sima said, "It is not where the master Hyakujo should reside." Hyakujo said, "Why is that?" And this geomancer, I can't think of the word, it's a feng shui guy, deciding where the best place is. "Why is that? Why shouldn't Hyakujo go?" And this geomancer said, "The master is a teacher of bone. That place is the flesh." There must be some vocabulary in that art of geomancy. So then Hyakujo said, "Is there anyone in my congregation here who could assume that position?" So the Sima said, "Let me examine them and see." At that time, the monk, the head monk, this is the head monk in our koan, who got beaten in the test. At that time, the monk Hua had the position of head monk. Hyakujo asked his attendant to summon this head monk. When the head monk got there, Hyakujo said to Sima, "How about this guy?" Sima asked the head monk to speak a few words and walk back and forth. Another translation has he asked the head monk to cough. Sounds like a physical with the doctor. He asked Hua to let's say speak a few words and walk back and forth. Then he said to Hyakujo, "He won't do." And then Hyakujo summoned Isan. At that time, Isan served as the head cook. This leads us up to our koan. Sima took one look at Isan and said, "This is the abbot of the new monastery." So if Hyakujo got that advice that from that kind of authority saying that Isan was the guy, why did he stage this contest? Or let's call it a test. There's a entry in a book of stories from around the world. The book is called The Man of Many Qualities, A Legacy of the I Ching. Marvelous book, collection of stories from all over the world. There were many, many different countries. And this one is attributed to Confucius. And it's about testing a person's character. "Man's mind is more treacherous than mountains and rivers, and more difficult to know than the sky. For with the sky you know what to expect in respect of the coming of spring, summer, autumn, and winter, and the alternation of day and night. But man hides his character behind an inscrutable appearance. There are those who appear tame and self-effacing, but conceal a terrible pride." Roshi Kapo once said to me, "Watch out for the quiet ones." "There are those who have some special ability but appear to be stupid. There are those who are compliant and yielding but always get their objective." Aren't these all familiar to us? "Some are hard outside but soft inside, and some are slow without but impatient within. Therefore, a gentleman," that's the ideal in Confucianism, someone of great refinement of character and wisdom. "Therefore, a gentleman sends someone to a distant mission in order to test his loyalty. He employs him nearby in order to observe his manners. He gives him a lot to do in order to judge his ability. He suddenly puts a question to him in order to test his knowledge and makes a commitment with him under difficult circumstances to test his ability to live up to his word. He trusts him with money in order to test his heart and announces to him the coming of a crisis to test his integrity. He makes him drunk in order to see the inside of his character and puts him in female company to see his attitude toward women. Submitted to these 9 tests, a fool always reveals himself." And then back to the test here. "He called all the monks together and told them that the one who could answer his question in an outstanding manner would be sent. Then he took a water bottle, stood it on the floor, and said, don't call this a water bottle, but tell me what it is. This is a classic Zen. Without being attached to the name, or the name and form of it, what is it really? So the head monk stepped forward. It just occurs to me that earlier in the Sesshin we had this this other head monk who was chasing after the sixth patriarch, or the head monk, the monk preceptor, who felt obliged to write his verse on the wall, even though he obviously was not confident that he had any understanding. Well, this is another one. The head monks seem to get a raw deal in some of these koans. The head monk said, "It can't be called a wooden sandal." What about that response? It's not bad. What's good about it is he has the savvy not to fall into affirmation. That is, he doesn't try to come up with some other name for it. He's been around long enough that he knows that it's safe to speak in terms of negation. It's not that. It's not a car. It's not a tree. Pretty good. B minus. It can't be called a wooden sandal. He's been around the block. And then Hyakujo asked Isan his opinion. And then Isan walked up, kicked over the water bottle, and left. A plus. Magnificent. But why? In what sense? It's a big point of this koan. The student has to show. How did he kick over the water bottle? What was he conveying? At that, Hyakujo laughed. There he had his public demonstration of what the geomancer had said, that Isan was his man. Hyakujo laughed and said, "The head monk has lost." Now that too is interesting. He doesn't say Isan has won. He said the head monk has lost. Why that phraseology? And then Isan was ordered to found the monastery. You know, I found some appreciation of both this head monk with his clever answer and that of the preceptor monk who wrote his well-meaning verse on the wall in response to the fifth patriarch's challenge. Thought of what Theodore Roosevelt once wrote. He said, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the one who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who, at the worst, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. Something any serious Zen practitioner can take to heart if he or she is feeling timid about trying something. And now Mumon's commentary. Though Isan was extremely valiant, he could not leap out of Hyakujo's trap. Upon close examination, you'll see that Isan accepted the heavy and refused the light. How so? Look, removing the towel from his head, he shouldered an iron yoke. This first sentence is more of Mumon being wry. He was extremely valiant, but he couldn't leap out of Hyakujo's trap. No? You'll see that Isan accepted the heavy and refused the light. Here he's referring to his ongoing responsibilities as head cook, as the light. You can imagine what the responsibilities of the abbot of this huge monastery, 1,500 people, I think I read somewhere, what that would have been like. He removed the towel from his head. This is a very lightweight, very thin cotton towel that the monks in the kitchen wear, the head cook and the other monks wear while they're working. Still, to this day in Japan, when you go there, you'll see them wearing this in the kitchen. He removed the towel and shouldered an iron yoke. His willingness to take on the responsibility. Wallace Stevens, the poet, said, "After the final no, there comes a yes. On that yes, the future of our world depends." What might you have done if confronted with that test? The water bottle is sitting there on the ground. Scores, maybe hundreds of monks were gathered around. I got a taste of what these big congregations, these big crowds of ancient China were like. When the first time I went to China, it was before they had even begun to modernize. So there were no movies or televisions or any kind of entertainment that would be so common here. And these scenes come back to mind. There was one at the foot of Wu Tai Shan near the town there. There was a big town square, and they... There was a crowd of, I don't know, maybe 75 or 100 people, and in the middle, in a ring, was a guy stripped to the waist who seemed to be some kind of a strong man promoting himself. people were enraptured. Another time, on that same first trip, it was 1982, I think, when our group, we had a Roshi Kaplo led this group of us from the Zen Center, and everywhere we went in public, there would be crowds forming in no time, gawking at us with our prominent noses. You know, the Chinese have more modest, shall I say that, modest noses, and they think we're kind of laughable with our protruding noses. And we had one guy with red hair and red beard, which blew their minds to smithereens to see someone with red hair and a red beard. There's one time we went into a department store. They're a little modest version of a department store, and we wanted to buy something or other, I don't know. And they crowded in. All the people crowded in with us, kind of glued to us, and we were at a counter, a glass counter that had some a little, I don't know, antiques or something in there. And they were all pushing in so forcefully and mindlessly that the glass counter crashed, shattered to pieces from the weight of them at our sides. So that's the kind of images I have in my mind when I look at this whole big theater that Hyakujo had cooked up with all these monks, that the water bottle on the floor, on the ground. And now Mumon's verse. Tossing away the bamboo baskets and the wooden ladle, Isan, with a direct blow, cuts off complications. The barrier Hyakujo set up for Isan did not stop him. The tip of his foot creates innumerable Buddhas. That kick. Earned him or consigned him to being a master in his own right, and then he had his own successor, and that successor had successors. The tip of his foot creates innumerable Buddhas. This line, the barrier Hyakujo set up for Isan did not stop him. One could infer from this that Isan wanted that job. By God, he was hoping he would be the winner. I don't think so. Plato said, access to power must be confined to those who are not in love with it. Imagine that test for our political leaders. Our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows. Beings without number,
I vow to liberate. endless vine passion, thy vowed uproot, dharma gaze beyond measure, thy vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. O beings without number, I vow to liberate endless blind passion, I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure, I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. All beings without number, I vow to liberate endless blind passions, I vow to uproot dark haze beyond measure, I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha, I vow to attain.